The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We welcome you back. It's been a very entertaining 2 hours, a fantastic conversation a minute ago with Tim Doyle about the upcoming college basketball season. He did think Alabama has a legitimate shot at making the Final Four. Tony Barnhart earlier. We have covered a lot of ground with a lot of people and really looking forward to our next guest, the NFL insider for ESPN, Field Yates, joining us. And Fields, it's great to have you on. I feel like it's been forever since I've seen you. I used to see you every weekend at ESPN, but that was before last March. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Paul. Yeah, I used to always love our Sunday morning interactions. You were wrapping up the college football day that was, and I was getting ready to discuss the NFL day that was ahead. But that is life in 2020 and 2021. But hopefully by this upcoming football season, we're having those same exchanges on Sunday morning.
I hope so, because they certainly were great. Let me ask you, because we're, you know, once the Super Bowl is over and then we're in this this intermediate period with the, where trades are happening and then free agency. And then this normally would be around the time of the combine. All eyes start turning toward the NFL draft. How are they adapting this year without the combine? Well, I mean, I know they had the Senior Bowl, but that's such a big thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And it's not just the on-field stuff that we see every year at the combine, because we know that there's the 40-yard dash and the three cone and the bench press and all that, but it's the one place where teams can conduct medical exams on every single prospect. And, you know, there's some huge names in this year's draft that have some medical question marks, whether it's the progress of Jalen Waddle's ankle as an example, to see how he is continuing to recover for Alabama. Beyond that, you've got interviews that are really hard to conduct now. You can do a Zoom interview, but talking to somebody face-to-face, in person, as you and I were just referencing about our own interactions, is different than having a conversation over the phone or over Zoom. So the combine is going to be somewhat of a hybrid event this year, and I say that meaning like teams are basically just going to put together their own version of the combine by speaking to players virtually and trying to get to as many pro days as possible. But this is going to be a year where teams have probably as little information on the players they are drafting as they've ever had in any previous draft.
Fields, you've worked in those NFL offices, so you know the mindset. But what happens when, in a normal time, this isn't normal, but when you bring in a player, no matter who it is, and I mean, what's that room like with the NFL? Who's in the room and what happens? Because it's critical, is it not?
Yeah, it can be. It is. I'll tell you what, you know, one of my first jobs right out of college was working for the Chiefs as basically an entry-level scout, and our organization conducted it in this way. Me and two other people that had the same role as me, we were responsible for the pre-draft visit coordination. So we'd be the person that would go and pick a player up from the airport, you'd bring him back to the hotel, you'd take him to the physical exam in the morning, you'd bring them around from coach to coach. So a lot of times you run through the car wash of the defensive player, his position coach, the coordinator, the general manager, and the head coach. And Paul, I'm here to tell you, like, they can have major influence. I know you recall the incredible career of Eric Berry during his time at Tennessee. We had the 5th pick in the draft that year, and safety was a major need. We brought Eric Berry in for a pre-draft visit, and when he left that day, I was 100% convinced, without a shadow of a doubt, that we were taking him at pick 5 overall. He was obviously an amazing player on the field, but I've never been around someone that's carried himself with so much grace and so much humility for someone that had accomplished as much as he had accomplished at the college level. Those visits can go a long way in helping teams solidifying their tiebreakers on their board. Ultimately, you're going to take the best player, but if you've got two guys that are neck and neck, that interpersonal connection can go a long way in solidifying that player's standing.
What are the little things that clubs look for? And, you know, just from the time you pick somebody up at the airport, I'm sure you're tracking it because there's so much to learn. Forgetting the talent, which is critical, but what are the intangibles that you guys, or at least clubs now, are looking for?
you know, the old expression, like the way to measure an individual's character is by seeing how that person treats those that can do nothing for
right.
him or her, right? And I remember, you to just extrapolate the Eric Berry experience one notch further, is that, again, I'm a 22-year-old, you know, basically, I mean, I am the lowest rung of the totem pole. And by the end of the experience, I felt like I had developed a connection with Eric Berry to the point that, Paul, this is like, this still sort of boggles my mind. After we drafted Eric Berry, within minutes of the pick, he texted me, of all people, to say, like, let's go, we're going to do this. And you meet other players that show up and they have maybe a different level of, you know, they maybe comport themselves like somebody that's been there, done that, right? And you wonder what it's going to be like when that player has so much thrust upon him that could influence the way that that individual works and the drive that he continues to show, because so many of these players at the college level have long been the best player on their own team. They get to the pros, it's not going to be that way. You've got to figure out how somebody is wired. So I think back to some of those memorable visits, whether it was an Eric Berry, a Russell Okung, who we brought in, who was outstanding as well, guys who really stood out. And you thought to yourself, you know, there's a lot that we can't predict on the field, but are we going to be able to trust this player off the field and know that he's doing everything within his power to reach the potential we'd like him to reach? And those visits are not the only part of the process that matters, but they certainly are an influential one.
Fields, let me get to what I know fans are interested in, and that's what's going to happen in the draft. Right now, it's all a projection. I know some people have raised some doubt about Trevor Lawrence being the first pick. I don't know how they could raise doubt, but I'm going to let you answer it as an expert.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes what I think happens, Paul, is especially this year where all of us are you know, largely operating within our own home and there are less events that take place, whether it's no combine, whether it's, you know, even the number of events that have been canceled or, you know, the reduced schedule we're seeing in some of the sports that normally carry us at this time, is I think we have too much time on our hands, to be honest with you. I think that we spend so much time analyzing something that I guess the old paralysis by analysis kicks in, right? It's like you spend so much time watching Trevor Lawrence and that you think to yourself, like, do I need to find a warp that doesn't exist? And maybe some people fall into that trap. You know, I've spent a lot of time studying Trevor Lawrence for a project that I'm working on, which we all have seen Trevor for 3 years, because he's an incredible player. And I went into that project wondering, am I going to find something in really examining him that I might look at and say, all right, that's a clear area for growth for Trevor Lawrence. And of course, any rookie player is going to have areas he's going to eventually be able to improve upon. But in terms of readiness at the age of 21, 22 years old, I think the hype is all fair, legitimate, and real. And I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that he's going to be the first overall pick in the 2021 NFL draft. And the Jaguars aren't going to think twice about it.
We're chatting with Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider. You can also catch his First Draft podcast as part of ESPN Audio. Let me ask you about number two, though, because I saw, I think it was McShay today, is now projecting Ja'Marr Chase as number two. And LSU fans understand how badly they missed him this year if he's projected to go that high. Do you think that's how it's going to end up?
I think there's a case for it. And it's hard because we just saw Devontae Smith have what I would classify as the finest receiver season in college football history. I mean, if not, it's right there in the top three. But it's not like Ja'Marr Chase's 2019 season is that far behind. And, you know, I sort of look at it as if you're choosing between Ja'Marr Chase and Devontae Smith as prospects at six in one hand, a half dozen in the other, if you're making the case for Ja'Marr Chase as the best wide receiver in this year's draft, I think a couple of the areas where he might have a slight edge over Devontae is, you know, he's a bigger player, obviously. We know that Devontae is probably going to weigh in somewhere around 170, 175 pounds. Ja'Marr probably closer to 185 or 190 pounds. Bigger player in terms of height as well. Incredibly explosive. I don't think you can go wrong with either one of them, though. Like, I'm not going to plant my flag and say, all right, this guy is definitely better than the other as far as those top two wide receivers in the draft. But Ja'Marr is special enough that if you put him into the right offense, you know, I don't know that Justin Jefferson's rookie season is replicatable every single year, but you know, I think he could have a potential Justin Jefferson type impact on his NFL team.
We're chatting with Field Yates. I know I could ask you a million questions. Let me confine it to a few. We get a lot of calls here about Mac Jones. He was nowhere to be found a couple of years ago. Is he still in the first round?
I think so. And, you know, the quarterback class starts with Trevor Lawrence. I think there is a debate who's number two. I think most people will agree it's either Zach Wilson or Justin Fields. And then I think Trey Lance has probably solidified himself as the next quarterback up. He's part of that top four. And I think two through four are interchangeable in some people's mind. But I think Mac Jones has clearly settled in as the fifth best quarterback prospect in this year's draft. And, you know, maybe he doesn't fill quite as many boxes on the scorecard in terms of athletic ability. He definitely doesn't, right? But Mac Jones, in terms of the pre-draft process, so far what he's done has been a home run at every chance he's gotten. The season was remarkable, and I know that he had amazing talent around him. I still look at the 45 touchdowns, the 4,500 passing yards, incredible accuracy. He was awesome during the Senior Bowl. I was down there for the week in Mobile, and it was clear that there was one quarterback that was way different than the other five that were there. And in some ways, Mac looked like the most exciting NFL prospect at the entire event. He's got so much maturity to him. He's obviously a leader. You don't start at Alabama and have the kind of season that he had without being an awesome worker. And I know he just started for 1 year, basically. He had four games that he started at the end of 2019. But I do think those years learning behind both Jalen Hurts and Tua will go a long way towards Mac Jones' development. He feels like a more ready player than most would be with, I think, just 19 starts under his belt.
Field Yates joining us. Field, I know the next few months will be insane. We thank you for making time here on a Friday afternoon. All the best, and we hope you'll come back.
Thank you, Paul. Always great to catch up. And like we said, let's hope that we're doing it in person in about 7 months from right now.
I can't wait. Thank you, Fields. Fantastic conversation there. We will take a break. We've had some really amazing guests today, and we're not done yet. We'll get back to your phone calls. I know it's been a while. I apologize. But we've had guest after guest after guest, and they've gone so well. We've kept them a while. 855-242-7285 is our number, and we're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And we welcome you back here on a Friday afternoon, and let's get back to calls. Let's check in with Micah, who is in Connecticut. Hello, Micah.
Hey, Paul. How's it going today?
Very well. Thank you, Micah.
Hey, I just wanted to call, first of all, about the caller that you talked to yesterday. I think his name was John from Tuscaloosa.
Yes.
I was really inspired. by that call. It's probably one of the best calls I've heard. I've been listening to your show for years. And, you know, he just really kind of moved me almost to tears. I was really inspired by his dad's story.
Yeah, for those who didn't hear it, let me quickly update. It was this gentleman called in from Alabama, and he said his father had played football at Alabama. He went to the war and was at Iwo Jima, which was one of the most consequential battles in the history of American history. And, you know, he told the story in such a poignant way. I agree with you. I was fighting back my emotion as well. And then he did survive that, which was a bloody battle. It was one of the last battles of World War II in the Pacific Theater. And he came back and played football at Alabama. It's not really telling the whole story, but the call was just fantastic.
Yeah, I was just so moved. I just felt, I don't call to your show very often, but, you know, this one, I really felt the need to call and tell you how inspired I was. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, one of these days we probably ought to regurgitate that, because it really, I don't know, obviously people come and go during the day, but it's a call worth hearing again.
In fact, I listen to it. I listen to your podcast. I don't get to listen to your show live all the time, so I listened to it this morning on the way to work again. That's how inspired I was.
Well, thank you for saying that.
So no problem. So the second part of my call is I wanted to talk to you about Dan Mullen and his recruiting down in Florida. And, you know, I think he's a great coach. But I think the recruiting's kind of been a little lackluster in Gainesville, so to speak. I mean, he's developed some good players, but if you look at the recruiting classes that he's had compared to some of the other top-tier programs in the SEC, I think it's been somewhat disappointing. I think that the transfer portal has worked to his favor, but what are your thoughts?
I agree with you. We had a guest on National Signing Day. You know, I asked a question about that because it seems like it's gotten a little better, but I mean, I expect Florida to recruit at the same level as Georgia and Alabama. Let's be honest, there really isn't any difference in the programs other than the number of championships that Alabama's won. There are no excuses at Georgia, at Georgia or Florida, especially. And I'm not really sure. I think our guest that day said that, you know, he hasn't placed quite as high a priority, that he's more of a developer. But you can't win championships in the SEC by gambling on your development skills.
Right, I agree. I hope the recruiting, improves over the next couple of years. Because I think, you know, while you can take your chances on the portal. I think that, again, that's worked in his favor, but I think, you know, we really haven't recruited, like, you know, a five-star quarterback, which Florida really needs, I think.
And, Micah, what's Florida's excuse? I mean, this is a period where FSU has been about as down as they have been in 40 years. And FSU is notoriously a phenomenal recruiting machine, Miami the same way. I mean, you've got the best program in the state of Florida right now, and I'm not sure they've taken – well, I forget, not sure. They have not taken advantage of it.
Right. I agree with you, Paul.
Hey, Micah, thank you for the call, and let's hear from you again. Another Michael. This one is a little farther south from Connecticut. Michael is in Virginia. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Paul. Big fan of the show. This is Mike G with the War Report on YouTube. I wanted to ask you about the – transfer Dylan Brooks. Tennessee has released him from his national letter of intent. It looks like it is a strong likelihood that he's headed to Auburn. I'm wondering what your thoughts on what this does in terms of the perception of success of this recruiting class for Brian Harsin. And given where they stand right now, what do you think about what's a successful season for Harsin next year? I mean, we fired Gus. He was an 8-win coach, right? You're on record as saying that you're a Gus fan. Yeah, I think a lot of us expected a lot more. You think 8 wins is a successful season for Harsin next year?
First of all, on Dylan, I think it would be a great pickup. And it, obviously a really strong player, but what something like that does, it gives fuel to the confidence of a new coach, and that's necessary. Harsin has a great resume, but he's not well known to anyone in Alabama or in the Auburn family, so I think that would be significant. I think 8 wins would be very good next year. I think when you analyze the schedule, it is very tricky, especially with a road game at Penn State. That's not a game I would say Auburn will be a favorite in. And not only that, you go to LSU 2 weeks after that. So I mean, you very conceivably could have 2 losses, and then you have an early game with Georgia. And, you know, Auburn will not be a favorite in that game either. And if you drop all 3, you've got to make it up somewhere on the other side with A&M, a trip to South Carolina and Alabama. So I think 8 game. I would think 8 wins would be very good for Brian Harsin.
Yeah, I agree, Paul. You know what? The way the schedule's stacking up, if Bo Nix is the starter and they can improve Bo on the road, his road numbers have been god awful, right? Like I think that Penn State game gets a little winnable for us, and 9 wins might not be out of this.
Michael, this is what I love about fans. There's always that game you can turn. And by the way, I'm not laughing. It's just that's confidence. And Brian Harsin, we've had him on a couple of times, including earlier, I think on Monday, and he is not shy about his confidence. I mean, this is not a bombastic coach, but he's very confident in what he brings to the table. Nick is up next in Dallas. Hey, Nick, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Feinbaum?
I'm doing okay. I hope you guys are out in Dallas.
Yeah, we're doing all right. Snows came and it's gone now. Still some people without power and stuff, but we got the Hogs coming to play some baseball in the showcase this weekend. Looking forward to that. I think we play 3 top 10 teams, so always it's gonna be a good time, and hopefully we can get some W's. I was just calling to see what your thoughts are about Sam Pittman, where you think our expectations should be, and I think when September 11th comes around, Texas comes into town. I think Steve Sarkisian is going to get put on blast in full display for the whole country to see. I think he's a self-proclaimed offensive guru, and I think we're going to win that game, and I think we're going to shock a lot of people this year.
Well, I think the world of Sam Pittman, and I'll never forget when I heard that he had been hired. I was in a state of shock, like a lot of people. But that shock wore off pretty quickly. We had him on the program about 3 or 4 days later, and I saw through a television screen what Hunter Yurecek obviously saw before all of us. It is an authentic man who just happened to be the right man at that particular time. And I think he is. I'm still amazed they only won 3 games last year. It seems like they did much better, but I realize that Auburn game probably.
Well, we could talk about some robberies.
Yeah, Auburn and LSU, we're not going to go in Sam Pittman's Hall of Fame when it comes to SEC officiating.
Right.
Well, you be well, and
I don't know. I think we're all happy with them. I think we're heading the right direction, and I'm telling you, come September, just them Texas Longhorns better look out.
I hope so. I can't wait. Hey, thank you for the call. Let's check out John in Athens, Georgia. John, thanks. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, long time listener, first time caller. How you doing?
We are doing great. Thank you.
That's good to hear. All right, so my question is, I'm looking at Saban's disciples, and I'm trying to think who's going to be the first one to take him down. Obviously, Kirby Smart's coming in strong every year, but Lane Kiffin has swag in a cup. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, when Lane was hired, I said on my Greenberg show, I thought Lane might be the one, and I didn't miss that by much a couple of months ago. I think Kirby is probably in a better position if you're looking at this upcoming season. because he has the team, but Lane's the kind of guy that is, you know, he has to pull that surprise, and I think he almost did. I'm not sure. I'm not as confident today as I was back then. I think that honor favors Jimbo or Kirby Smart right now.
Right. I think Ole Miss is probably going to lose a game or two that they shouldn't, but I think they're going to win a game that they shouldn't as well. Just that's the way that, you know, cards are dealt for Ole Miss in general. But, you know, Lane Kiffin's a magic man. He's been called a walking aphrodisiac, so I'm really excited and looking forward to it.
that's quite a description, by the way. Art is up next. Art, thank you. Good afternoon.
Paul, golly, man, y'all are just like, you know, before I preface my conversation with you, you know, your henchmen that questioned you before are so much nicer these days. You know, those other guys like, hey, listen, Art, if all you want to talk about is bathing a dog, you need to call back. I'll be like, okay. Yeah, but
you know, Art, I think whoever said that to you was probably telling the truth.
Whoa. Well, at least it's not about the possum. Good grief. There's two or three things, Paul, that I'll never grow tired about you, is the way you talk about the Marines and sailors in the Pacific. And it's just this certain respect you have. And I'm not of that generation, and you're one removed. And those doggone, my granddad was in the Pacific, too, in the Navy on a PT boat. And there's certain people that just have a certain respect for it, and I love the way you bring it up.
Well, yeah, you know, Art, I think when you're part of a generation that just barely misses serving, which I did, you're attuned to it. And then everyone in my family, from my father to my grandfather, my father I mentioned was in the Philippines. My uncle flew fighter missions over Italy and Germany. So, I mean, you do, he was like a second father to me. You become you hear these stories as a young person. And then I think I've mentioned, you know, I have one nephew who served in the Marines and another who is a naval, went to Annapolis. So, I mean, you do, and he's a commissioned pilot. So
it's a healthy fear.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a real healthy fear.
I mean, I would have been proud to serve. I came at a time when Vietnam was winding down.
Oh, yeah, you could have served easily, Paul.
Yeah, I didn't. I missed it by about 2 years, so it wasn't by a long shot. But as a 12 or 13 year old, I was definitely thinking about it.
Were you physically? You could have served.
I could have served. I wouldn't have been in line for a Medal of Honor, but
well,
I probably could have made it.
You don't fuck with. Oh, excuse me. Good grief. but anyway, thanks a whole lot. You're great. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, I think I would have made it. Let's check out who we got next. How about Jason in Miami? Hey, Jason, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing well. I wanted to call. I apologize if you've talked about this or I missed it, and maybe I'm a little late to the game. I'm kind of dipping back into last year where I don't know about you, but I was really surprised about the placing of Kyle Trask in the Heisman race. So I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that, as well as, do you believe Emory Jones can really take over the helm at quarterback and also kind of jump on the defensive side with Todd Grantham kind of on the defensive side under pressure? Can he kind of deliver in this year?
Jason, I still have some questions about Grantham. I think that's an unknown. I think Emory has a really good chance. You know, the Trask Heisman thing, to me, he was a very legitimate candidate, but the end of the season ultimately did him in. Unfortunately, we have to go to the break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we welcome you back. And Austin is up next in New Jersey. Hey, Austin.
Hey, Paul, what's good?
We're doing great.
So
thank you.
So my question was about the Florida Gators running back room. So with the Florida Gators this year, we have 2 5-stars in Lorenzo Lingard and another 5-star transfer in DeMarcus Bowman. We also have returning Malik Davis, who I heard may move back to the slot, and Damon Pierce. So what do you think? Who do you think will get the starting job? Do you have any idea?
Not at the moment, but I will say this. I would expect that to be a real luxury for Dan Mullen.
Yeah, I know. It sounds great over there. It's a very crowded running back room. I've heard there's going to be a lot of position changes, so it should be exciting to see what's going to happen this year.
Well, it's good to hear from you. Thank you very much. Terrence is up next in Mississippi. Hey, Terrence.
Good evening. First-time caller.
Well, wonderful. Great to have you on.
Yes, sir. I was watching you earlier. You were talking to an NFL specialist about the draft.
Yeah, Field Yates.
And I know how good Trevor Lawrence is, Mac Jones, two excellent quarterbacks, a lot of ability, a lot of potential, able to be the next big thing going into the NFL. Now, when I think about it, do they both deserve to have the potential of being 1 and 2? Yes, they do. Question is, will they be 1 and 2? And which team will get which player if they go that way? Your thoughts on that?
Now, you mentioned, I apologize. You said Mac and who else?
Lawrence from Clemson.
Well, no, I don't think there's anyone in Trevor Lawrence's league. So I think Mac is a great quarterback, but right now, I mean, he's projected to go, you know, maybe somewhere between 28 and 32.
Oh, wow. Didn't see it going down that low. Yeah.
Well, you have to remember there are three other quarterbacks. The quarterback from BYU. There's one other guy.
Yeah, he's good.
He's considered the fourth quarterback.
I didn't even think of it that way, but yeah, you have raised a very good point. I didn't even see that. But I mean, when you look at Lawrence, what he's accomplished. A great season for the last several years, of course, getting blown last year, and of course, he'll take it out again this year in the postseason play. But he shows he has one of the top potentials. And I mean, Mac Jones from Bama, yes, he is a good quarterback. He has agility, he has ability, he can arm the ball down a bit like a rifle. But at the same time, yes, there are other quarterbacks who appear to have the upper hand on Mac Jones.
This is just how they project. I thought Field said something really interesting about how great Mac did at the Senior Bowl. Legend is next.
Hey, Paul, great show today, man. I'm enjoying it, man. Great
Thank
show.
Thank you.
Man. Yeah, hey, the guy about the NFL, he said Ja'Marr Chase, the Jets are talking about taking Ja'Marr Chase at number 2?
Yeah, Todd McShay right now has him projected as number 2 and Devontae about 6 or 7.
See, that's why they're the Jets, Paul. Because I'm going to tell you right now, yeah, Ja'Marr Chase is good. You know, probably like a Terrell Owens type player. But Deontay Smith is a Marvin Harrison clone. And you could take that number 2 pick, Paul, and trade back to about 7 and get Deontay Smith and pick up about 3 number 1 draft picks for moving back so somebody could get Justin Fields or the kid Wilson out of BYU. Wouldn't you agree, Paul? Don't you move back and get like 2 or 3 number 1 draft picks for Deontay Smith over Ja'Marr Chase? Don't you think that would be a wise GM move?
I don't know. I mean, I thought Field Yates made a really good point. You know, we forgot. I mean, when you don't see a guy for a year, you forget how good he was. And, you know, Ja'Marr Chase is a big guy, and I realize he played on a team equal to – well, not equal to in your mind, but a similar type team as Alabama. And, I mean, I just think it's a need situation, really.
Yeah, the New York Jets have a lot of needs. Like,
they got bigger needs than a wide receiver.
Yeah, you trade that pick and pick up 2 or 3 number ones and then get Deontay Smith or Jalen Waddle back at 7 or 8. That's why they're the Jets, and that's why I should be their GM. I trade that pick at a second and pick up a bunch of picks.
Based on some of the people that have been the GMs of the Jets, I think you would certainly be in line for the job, legend.
Yeah, I would definitely do it better than what they have. And, hey, if Urban Meyer don't draft Trevor Lawrence, fire him the next day.
Hey, legend, thanks for the call. We went a little bit long, so I hate to run early, but we have to take a break here so we can make sure we get all the breaks in. We are coming back. Much more to go.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We welcome you back here as the third hour begins to wind down. Kerry is up next in Tennessee. Hey, Kerry.
Time listener, often time caller.
Thank you.
I have something that's been on my mind most of my adult life. It's a little before my time, and actually maybe a little before your time, but I know you can clear it up for me, okay?
Of course.
I watched this episode on ESPN about Alvarez, Cuban.
Carlos Alvarez.
And I don't want to take anything away from this show. It was a great show, great story. But there was a story within a story there I want to ask you about, and I think you can clear it up for me.
I'll try.
Doug Dickey, if I remember, in 1970 might have been his last year down there, which could have been Alvarez's last year. This guy goes 9-1-1 at Florida. Dickey does. And, you know, I know the story about Dickey after he left there and all that, and that's, you know, it's kind of pick up there a little bit. But what I don't understand is, I mean, I know Florida State had a lot of probation issues and recruiting issues during the 80s, Charlie Pell and all that, maybe a little bit some in the 70s. I know there's a huge history of that down there during that time frame. But how do they get rid of a coach?
Yeah, let me hold on a second. I think I can help you here.
Hang on. I've lost you due to the Florida Miami game. So if you don't mind, I want to listen to you a second.
Okay, that's great. So here's the deal with Doug Dickey. Doug Dickey played at Florida. In 1964, he became the Tennessee coach. He left.
That's right.
He left Tennessee at the end of the '69 season. Very famous. Tennessee ended up playing Florida in the Gator Bowl. He didn't start at Florida until 70, and he coached there through 78. So,
78.
He probably got a year. He may have gotten a year out of Alvarez, but I think Ray Graves had been the coach before him.
Okay. Now, if I recall right, most of
Alvarez played for him, though.
The 80s were Charlie Pell and him.
The background on Charlie Pell is he had been at Clemson and left Clemson to go to Florida, I think at the end of maybe the 78, 79 season, somewhere in there. And he was at Florida until he got fired, I believe, in 85.
Yeah, if I remember right, there's some recruiting problems.
Florida got slammed in the Charlie Pell era.
Yeah, a couple other quick things here, and I'll let you go. I believe Shea's got the quarterback out of North Dakota State going before Mac.
Yeah, I did.
Early,
yeah,
that
guy was a little bit higher on Mac than McShay. But I think Mac Jones will be a really good quarterback. He just has to get
I really do, too. Now, real quick here, yesterday, the day before, I was watching, and there's a discussion about Central Florida's coaching tree. Do you know who their first head coach was when they decided to play football?
Who was that?
Central Florida's.
Was it O'Leary?
Lou Saban.
I did not know that. That's amazing.
Did you not know that?
I need to run to the break here. Thanks for the call. Lou Saban is related to Nick Saban distantly. We'll take a short break.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.